British Spy Stories, Season 1. Spy or Traitor? Hi, this is MF Kelleher. Next week is the final episode of Spy or Traitor, Season 1 of British Spy Stories. There'll also be a preview of Season 2, The Kill Order, which starts the week after that. In Season 2, Gabby's adventures in MI6 continue, and she has to go undercover deep into Eastern Europe and destroy a violent trafficking operation. The audiobooks of all the stories are on Audible if you want to give someone a gift, and the Kindle and paperback versions are all on Amazon. To find any of those, follow the link in the show notes below for this episode. I'm writing more books all the time, and I'm just starting book 4 of Gabby's Adventures, which will be out in April 2024. Thank you for listening. I'll see you soon. Episode 27. Stephen Lawton stands looking out of the window at the Thames. From his office in the MI6 building at Vauxhall Cross, he can see the grey tidal water as it flows back and forth, like his own life has done, for longer than he cares to remember. A knock on the door echoes around the room.
"Come in, Martine,"
he calls, and hears the door open behind him, but doesn't turn, as Martine will do her work quietly, without disturbing him. Lawton continues his rapt attention on the river.
"Stephen."
The voice is not Martine's, and Lawton turns his head.
"Sir Bernard, I thought
we need to talk."
"Of course, sir."
Lawton turns away from the glass.
"Shall we sit?"
They move to the sofas and take places on opposite sides of a low table that separates the seating.
"Some evidence has come to light," begins Sir Bernard. "Evidence about a mole in MI6.
Lawton can feel his body relax, as this means he is out of scope of any investigation. Otherwise, he wouldn't be being briefed on it.
"You remember the meeting a couple of weeks ago, when Blackhawk went off-grid after the location of a kill was leaked, and one of our C9s was killed in action?" continues Sir Bernard.
"Of course."
"Do you remember that we sent Riverside to bring her in?"
"Yes, naturally,"
says Lawton.
"Do you remember that he met her in Switzerland, and that they were attacked, and the location of that meeting must have been leaked, as very few people knew about it?"
Lawton stops responding to each question, as Sir Bernard seems to be building a narrative.
"Do you remember that we put untrained embassy staff into a live operation after Blackhawk disappeared, so we could continue her work of turning a member of the criminal gang operating in Berlin?" continues Sir Bernard. "Well, those embassy staff are dead now. Murdered. The information on that operation was leaked as well. We responded, of course. An investigations branch have been interviewing people, searching for this Petrov character."
The more senior man stops and lets time drift on inside the room, like the water outside the window.
"It turns out that Blackhawk has spent 2 weeks gathering evidence about the leaks."
"Excellent,"
says Lawton.
"She's a good agent," says Sir Bernard. "She has sent me a file of evidence, and Miss Peretz, in investigations, has filled in the details from her interviews."
Sir Bernard stops again and turns his head to the light coming through the window. He adjusts the spectacles on the end of his nose, then turns back to Lawton.
"We know you are the mole, Stephen. We know you are Petrov."
"That's ridiculous. Blackhawk is trying to frame me, obviously. She's never been dependable, and this just shows she has a streak of revenge about her. I never did trust her."
The other man watches the bluster.
"Stephen," says Sir Bernard sharply, then more quietly, "you're embarrassing yourself."
"But..."
Sir Bernard raises his palm to silence Lawton.
"You have two options as far as I can see," he says. remain in post, and we feed Moscow false information from you to them. Or you spend the rest of your life in prison somewhere, and likely meet a Russian assassin one day, when you least expect it. Lawton has thought about this moment repeatedly over the years of being a traitor. What would he say when the evidence is too compelling? What would he say when the final dead end is reached? The Moscow advice is to deny everything, every time, and never admit to even the slightest misdemeanor.
"Does Linney know?" says Sir Bernard.
Lawton's mind is in pain. He wants his thoughts to be clear, but they won't sort themselves out. Images of Linney and Ivan, and the agents he sent to their deaths, swirl around inside him. His mouth opens to speak, but words are not there. He searches for anything that will make it all stop.
"I assume she doesn't know."
Lawton, finally, acknowledges what he has spent the last 20 years lying about, and the sounds croak out from his gullet.
"She doesn't know."
His eyes are fixed on the floor. He can't look at Sir Bernard. He feels a wave of relief and a wave of sadness, and his eyes water. Sir Bernard sits patiently. He has known Lawton for 5 years and had not suspected anything like this. The acting has been extraordinary. Sir Bernard has seen moles before, but never at this level. Never with over 20 years' service in MI6.
"Was it from the beginning, Stephen? At Oxford?"
Lawton clears his throat.
Yes.
"Was the man you found dead on the heath your Russian controller?"
"Yes."
"Are you prepared to feed Moscow false information from now on, and appear to stay in post?"
"Yes,"
he says without hesitation.
"You'll have to be debriefed by the investigations branch over the next few weeks, of course. We'll need every detail, every leak, every meeting."
"I understand," he says.
He finally raises his head to the other man.
"I assume you are carrying the standard issue Russian arsenic tablet," says Sir Bernard. "If you would be so kind."
He holds out his palm, and Stephen pulls out the capsule and hands it over.
"Is Martine part of it?"
No, not at all."
"She'll need to be changed, nevertheless. I'm going to bring Murphy in from Berlin on this for now," says Sir Bernard. "He will make all the decisions pertaining to the official role, but you will still have the job as far as the outside world and Moscow are concerned."
Sir Bernard stands up. For a second, the two men look at each other, both with no discernible emotion on their faces. Then the more senior man turns away and walks out of the door. The traffic on Highgate West Hill is heavier than usual, as it winds its way up from Swain's Lane shops and restaurants, past Karl Marx's grave in Highgate Cemetery, and curves around the village's South Grove at the summit. Lawton sits in the back of the cab and watches the lights of the cars coming down the hill, his heart still beating fast, as it has done in the 2 hours since Sir Bernard confronted him. The taxi drops him off on the corner of the road, and he walks to his front door. A slight rain is in the air, carried on the breeze that blows in from the heath. He turns the key in the lock and goes inside.
"I'm here, darling,"
Linny calls from the lounge. He walks through the house to her.
"I've had a very odd day,"
she says.
"You know that case of the mercenaries? My client was being charged with handling secret information. I had a call just as I was leaving tonight. It was the chap from the Cabinet Office. Said he had spoken to the Attorney General, and the case against my client has been dropped. Just like that."
"You must have scared them, my darling," he says quietly.
"You think?" He nods, and she notices his sadness. How are you? You look tired.
She holds out her hand to him, and he sits next to her on the sofa.
How was your day?
They talk for half an hour, then Stephen makes them dinner while Linny has a bath. They eat in the dining room and set places on the table at the far end so that they can see the day slide away into dusk. Linny clears the plates and Stephen decides to take his bag into the study from where he left it by the front door. On the doormat, a small square piece of paper sits, dead center. He didn't see it when he arrived home and stoops to pick it up. He unfolds it. The message reads, "Outside at 9 p.m. He checks his watch. It is 8:50. He puts his bag in the study, then says to Linny he is going to get some air. She is listening to the radio and waves a silent hand to acknowledge message received. He turns the handle and steps out into the night. It is colder now than when he arrived home. He buttons up his coat, the one that Linny bought him for Christmas. Lawton walks into the road. There is no traffic. He stands, waiting for something, but he isn't sure what. The streetlights stand guard, marking out the route down the hill in one direction and to the heath in the other direction. There are few sounds, only a distant drone of traffic, creating a permanent London background noise that no one notices after a few weeks of living there.
Petrov?
The word comes at him like an arrow. He turns, and a figure is standing in half shadow, only 10 feet away.
Who are you?
He says.
Your new controller. I wanted to introduce myself. I can't see your face. All in good time. What do you want?
Says Lawton.
To hear from you that you will continue your service to the motherland.
I will.
So your thoughts of stopping?
She says.
You've changed your mind?
Yes. Ivan was the one who encouraged me to think like that.
We suspected as much.
It will continue, just like before, he says.
They will be glad to hear that. I'll be in touch. You can go now.
Stephen obediently walks back to his house, turns the key, and shuts the door firmly behind him. The headlights of a vehicle that has been waiting in the dark suddenly illuminate the roadway. It moves and pulls up alongside the woman, who is walking away from the meeting. She opens the door, and for a split second, Marjorie's face is lit up by the streetlights before she disappears from view into the car.